December 4th, 1982, Boise, Idaho. A stranger enters the Sacred Heart Catholic Church and takes his own life by swallowing a cyanide capsule. He carries a suicide note signed William L. Toomey, but this turns out to be a false name, and the man is never officially identified. Years later, investigators explore the possibility that Toomey's suicide might be connected to a series of murders involving Catholic priests, and that an innocent man may have served time in prison for one of these crimes. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today I will be exploring yet another story which is a major rabbit hole, the 1982 suicide of a mysterious man who identified himself as William L. Toomey. This case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries in March of 1990, but was conspicuously absent when Season 2 was uploaded to Amazon Prime a few months ago. And you know me, when a popular Unsolved Mysteries segment is neglected like that, I jump all over the opportunity to cover it on The Trail Went Cold. It's been a while since I've done an episode about an unidentified decedent, as the biggest obstacle against covering those cases is that there often isn't a whole lot of information you can discuss. But today's episode is unique because the suicide of William L. Toomey is only the tip of the iceberg in a very convoluted story. We're also going to be exploring the murders of two Catholic priests, which took place in the year before Toomey's suicide, as well as doing a callback to an episode we released last summer about two other Catholic priests. One of these murders is technically solved because a suspect served time in prison for the crime, but there's very strong evidence that he was wrongfully convicted, and it's possible that the mysterious William L. Toomey might hold the key to this mystery. But before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes like this one and shorter mini-sodes. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new mini-sode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on our website. If there's anyone out there who wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the suicide of the unidentified man known only as William L. Toomey. Our story begins in Boise, Idaho in 1982. Our central figure is a mysterious male stranger who entered the Sacred Heart Catholic Church on the afternoon of December 4th. The man appeared to be between 35 to 45 years old and was heavily suntanned, had sun-bleached hair, and was dressed in Western attire. The man was apparently planning to enter the confessional, but could not because it was already occupied at that time. No one can be certain about the exact amount of time the stranger was in the church, but when parishioners started arriving for that evening service, they noticed him lying on the floor underneath a pew. When they went to check on the man, they discovered that he was dead, and it would eventually turn out that he had committed suicide by swallowing a cyanide capsule. The stranger carried a wallet, but it contained no form of identification, and he also carried an envelope containing $1,900 in cash and a typewritten note. The note read, "The enclosed currency should give more than adequate compensation for my funeral or disposal. Prefer to be cremated. Expenditures. What is left over, please take this as a contribution to this church. God will see to your honesty in this." It was signed William L. Toomey. Well, after the police started an investigation, they could find no reports of any missing persons under that name. His fingerprints were checked with the FBI and the Idaho Crime Bureau, but no record of him could be found. But they did make an unusual discovery. William L. Toomey just happened to be the name of a company in Boston which manufactured ceremonial garb worn by priests and nuns. In spite of this lead, no tangible connection could be found between the company and the deceased stranger, and it was apparent that William L. Toomey was nothing more than a pseudonym. However, there was a lot to suggest that he was not from Idaho. Since it was early December, and Toomey was heavily suntanned and dressed in Western attire, it seemed very likely that he had traveled to Boise from one of the southern states. In fact, he was wearing a leather belt with a specialized buckle containing a Mexican 100 peso coin in the center, and the belt was eventually traced to a gift shop in Phoenix. Since no one came forward to claim Toomey's body, the Sacred Heart Church provided him with a funeral service attended by over 300 people. However, in spite of Toomey's instructions in his suicide note, the authorities could not authorize his body to be cremated until he was officially identified, so he instead received a proper burial and a plaque dedicated to him under the name Unknown Wanderer. It was theorized that the Unknown Wanderer had shown up to the church with the intention of confessing to something before he committed suicide. When he discovered that the confessional was occupied, for whatever reason, he elected not to wait and quickly took his own life. But what could have compelled this man to travel such a great distance to commit an elaborate suicide? The case garnered national exposure when it was featured on Unsolved Mysteries 7 years later, but it failed to drum up any substantial leads, and the mysterious William L. Toomey continued to remain unidentified. However, his name would pop up in the Austin Chronicle in June of 2005, when they published an extensive article about his story which shared a potentially shocking revelation. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about a murder which took place nearly 1 year before Toomey's suicide. On the morning of December 22, 1981, a maid entered room 126 of the Sand and Sage Motel in Odessa, Texas, and was treated to a horrifying sight. The nude body of a middle-aged man was found on the floor with his hands tied behind his back. He had been severely beaten, and there was a large slice wound across his buttocks. The room had clearly been the scene of a very violent struggle, as there was overturned furniture and holes punched through the walls, and blood was everywhere. The victim had checked into the room sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m. the previous night, and registered under a name, address, and license number, which all turned out to be false. It would be 4 days before he was officially identified, and to everyone's surprise, it turned out that he was a 49-year-old Catholic priest named Father Patrick Ryan. Father Ryan originally hailed from Ireland, but he was currently the pastor of the St. William's Church in Denver City, a small town located 94 miles away from Odessa. Ryan was very well liked and respected by his parishioners, who grew concerned when he did not show up for Mass on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning. But the one thing no one could figure out is what was he doing in a motel room in Odessa? When investigators checked Father Ryan's apartment at the rectory in Denver City, they discovered steak and potatoes resting on top of his stove. This seemed to indicate that Ryan was preparing to make dinner when something compelled him to leave and make a lengthy drive to Odessa on December 21st. Ryan's vehicle was not parked at the Sand and Sage Motel, but it would eventually be discovered 90 miles away in the parking lot of a motel in Hobbs, New Mexico. It had presumably been driven there by the killer, and a silver chalice and an accordion Ryan owned were missing from the trunk, though there was still money left behind. The most promising lead was a backpack in Father Ryan's apartment, which belonged to a 25-year-old Native American man named James Harry Reyes, who originally hailed from the Jicarilla Apache Reservation in New Mexico. Reyes was pretty much an alcoholic, unemployed drifter who had 5 arrests on his record for drunk driving and 30 arrests for public intoxication. He would later admit that one of the driving forces behind his alcoholism was his unwillingness to admit that he was gay, something which would not have been accepted in the conservative Native American culture where he was raised. Anyway, Reyes was soon tracked down and questioned, and claimed that while hitchhiking on the evening of December 6th, he was picked up by a middle-aged man calling himself John. Of course, John turned out to be Father Patrick Ryan, And Reyes said he never even learned the priest's real name until he heard about Ryan's murder on the news. According to Reyes, John slash Father Ryan took him to a bar and they spent the night drinking together. Ryan seemed to take pity on Reyes, so he loaned him some money and extended an open invitation for Reyes to visit him at St. William's Church whenever he wanted. Well, on December 20th, Reyes did visit Father Ryan at the rectory, and the two men continued drinking together until the priest suddenly grabbed Reyes by his collar and forced him to perform oral sex. Reyes claimed that he was so disgusted that he left the rectory in a hurry and wound up leaving his backpack behind. However, Reyes needed a ride to Hobbs since his pickup truck was being held as collateral by a bail bondsman because he'd been arrested for driving without a license. So Reyes returned to the rectory the following morning in order to reconcile with Ryan, who apologized for his behavior and offered to drive Reyes to Hobbs. During their trip, Ryan picked up another hitchhiker, an unidentified black man who appeared to be in his 40s. After they arrived in Hobbs, Ryan dropped Reyes at the bail bondsman's house sometime after 11:30 a.m. before driving off, and Reyes claimed this was the last time he ever saw the priest. Reyes had a pretty extensive alibi to account for his whereabouts the rest of the day. After retrieving his truck from the bail bondsman, Reyes spent part of the afternoon drinking with a friend in Hobbs before heading on a trip to Albuquerque to spend Christmas with his family. Believe it or not, while driving out of town, Reyes claimed that he actually ran into the same black hitchhiker whom Ryan had picked up earlier that morning. Reyes gave the man a ride and dropped him off at a bus station in Roswell at around 6 p.m. After meeting up with another friend at his house to drink some beers, Reyes left Roswell at 8:30 p.m. and wound up spending the rest of the night going through a series of misadventures, which included crashing his truck into the ditch and getting a flat tire in the wee hours of the morning. As a result, Reyes had to have his truck towed back to Roswell, and he spent most of the following day waiting for it to be fixed before he finally resumed his journey to Albuquerque at around 7 p.m. on December 22nd. Well, naturally, the police were skeptical of Reyes' story, since he was an alcoholic with over 30 arrests on his record, and he was accusing a well-respected priest of forcing him to perform oral sex. But Reyes did pass a polygraph test, and his story about his whereabouts on the day of the murder did seem to check out, especially after he provided receipts placing him at locations he claimed he was at. After Father Ryan dropped Reyes off in Hobbs, the bail bondsman's daughter did confirm that she saw Ryan driving away with a black man in the car, just like Reyes said. Even though this man was never found, and it seemed like a massive coincidence that Reyes would pick him up hitchhiking later that day, records from the bus station in Roswell did show that a black man purchased a ticket to Clinton, Oklahoma shortly after 6 p.m., just like Reyes said. Even though the murder scene at the motel indicated that a violent struggle had taken place, there were virtually no signs of injury on Reyes. And after Father Ryan's murder was publicized, two teenage boys came forward and told police that he had once made an attempt to solicit them for sex. So maybe Reyes' story about Ryan forcing him to perform oral sex didn't seem so unbelievable after all. So Reyes was pretty much cleared as a suspect and went off the radar for several months, but his alcoholism got so bad that he started experiencing hallucinations and had to spend some time in a mental health center after saying he may have killed a priest. On November 18, 1982, after getting drunk and taking Quaaludes, Reyes actually called the Albuquerque police to confess to the murder of Father Patrick Ryan. When police arrived, Reyes confessed to them again, and he was taken into custody, but even though he recanted after he sobered up, it was too late. His drunken confession had been recorded, and he was charged with Father Ryan's murder. Even though this was the only evidence against him, Reyes was convicted at trial and sentenced to 38 years in prison. Over the next 3 decades, Reyes would get paroled on 2 separate occasions, but ended up returning to prison for parole violations. He was paroled for the 3rd time in 2012, and has been a free man ever since. Officially, the murder of Father Patrick Ryan is now a closed case, but Reyes has a lot of supporters who believe he was wrongfully convicted, and are continuously fighting to clear his name and earn him a full pardon for the crime. And quite frankly, Reyes has got a pretty convincing case for his innocence. He has a clear paper trail accounting for his whereabouts on the day of the murder, with witnesses and receipts placing him in Roswell until about 8:30 p.m., which is shortly after Ryan would have checked into the Sand and Sage Motel in Odessa. We don't know the exact time Ryan was killed, but we know that Rios crashed his truck into the ditch outside of Roswell during the wee hours of the morning of December 22nd. Some passing motorists helped pull Rios' truck out of the ditch, and there is documentation from a wrecker service showing that they towed his truck at 4 a.m. after discovering it had a flat tire. But here is the most important piece of evidence supporting Rios' innocence. He was pulled over by a state trooper 15 miles west of Roswell and received a time-stamped speeding ticket at 12:15 a.m. Since there were witnesses who could verify that Rios crashed his truck into the ditch shortly after this, then that means the only time frame when Rios could have murdered Father Ryan was between when he left his friend's house in Roswell at 8:30 p.m. and when he received a speeding ticket at 12:15 a.m. The problem is that the location where Rios received the ticket was approximately 215 miles away from the Sand and Sage Motel in Odessa. If you were driving at normal speed, that's a trip which would ordinarily take a minimum of 3 hours each way. So in order to travel from Roswell to Odessa, murder Father Ryan, and then travel back to Roswell again, Rios would have had to have driven between 125 and 130 miles per hour the entire way. And keep in mind that Rios was also heavily intoxicated at that time, and driving a pretty beat-up pickup truck on two-lane roads, so it seems like there's no earthly way he could have traveled that distance and committed the murder in a time frame of about 3 3/4 hours. But even if Rios had traveled at the speed of light and pulled it off, there's another problematic issue. Father Ryan's car was found 90 miles away at a motel in Hobbs, New Mexico. If Rios drove his own truck back to Roswell after the murder, how did Ryan's car end up in Hobbs? So yes, when you look at the timeline, it seems outright impossible that Rios could have committed this crime, but unfortunately, exonerating him is quite an uphill battle. You see, none of the fingerprints, blood, or hair found at the murder scene matched Rios, but in 1993, right around the same time period when Rios' supporters were making noise to get him released from prison, the Odessa police force decided to violate official policy by destroying all the physical evidence from the case. So even though DNA testing would most certainly exclude Rios as the perpetrator, that's no longer an option, since there's just no evidence left to test. It seems like the only way Rios could ever hope to clear his name now is if the real killer of Father Ryan is brought to justice. So how does this murder connect to the case of William L. Toomey? Well, for starters, Toomey's suicide took place just over 2 weeks after Rios was charged with Ryan's murder. That alone wouldn't be enough to suggest the two cases might be linked, but this rabbit hole is about to go even deeper. On November 10, 1982, Father Benjamin Carrier, a 50-year-old Catholic priest from the Our Lady of Light Church in Descanso, California, was murdered in a fashion which was remarkably similar to the murder of Father Ryan. Father Carrier's nude body was found inside a room at the El Rancho Motel in Yuma, Arizona. The cause of death was strangulation, and his hands were also tied behind his back. Carrier had checked into the motel the day before and paid for two people to spend the night. The manager remembered seeing a man in Carrier's pickup truck, but another witness would later see Carrier hanging around the pool with two men who both appeared to be in their late 20s or early 30s. It's believed that Carrier picked these guys up hitchhiking, but while they're both considered to be the prime suspects, neither of them has ever been identified. Carrier's pickup truck was also stolen and found in Las Vegas 3 days later. Now, there isn't nearly as much information out there about Father Carrier as there is about Father Ryan, and as far as I can tell, it doesn't look like there were any scandalous rumors about him. Some people believe Carrier might have picked up these two young men hitchhiking and took them to the motel because he genuinely wanted to help them, not because he was trying to solicit sex. Well, during the 1990s, a Boise police detective named Frank Richardson looked into these cases and was struck by the fact that Father Carrier's murder, James Harry Rios' arrest, and William L. Toomey's suicide all took place within a period of less than 1 month. So could it be possible that the mysterious Mr. Toomey was responsible for one or both of these priest murders, but after learning that an innocent man had been charged with one of the crimes, he could no longer live with the guilt and decided to travel to a Catholic church in Boise to take his own life. While there's no direct evidence to support this theory, it is somewhat compelling. Since he was heavily suntanned, and it was wintertime, investigators believe that Toomey was not from Idaho and had traveled from a warm, sunny part of the country, such as Texas or Arizona. He was dressed in Western attire and wore a customized belt buckle from a shop in Phoenix. But most interestingly, there's his odd decision to sign his suicide note with the name William L. Toomey, which happened to be the name of a company which manufactured priest garb. What could have compelled him to select that name in particular? Was his suicide related to priests somehow? Well, unfortunately, by the time this connection was made, all the physical evidence from Father Ryan's murder had been destroyed, so it's not like there's any way to conclusively link Toomey to his murder. So officially, James Harry Reyes is still considered to be the killer of Father Patrick Ryan, the murder of Father Benjamin Carrier is unsolved, and the identity of William L. Toomey, along with the reason for his suicide, remains unknown. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Okay, so even though William L. Toomey is the main subject of this episode, he's only one piece of the puzzle in this very convoluted story. But before we start discussing him, I'm afraid I'm going to have to dig this rabbit hole even deeper. Last year around this time, you might recall that I released an episode about the unsolved murders of two more Catholic priests, Father Ronaldo Rivera and Father John Kerrigan. Father Rivera was a very well-respected figure in Santa Fe, New Mexico, until he was lured to a meeting at a remote rest stop by an unidentified caller on the evening of August 7, 1982. He was subsequently shot to death, and his body was found in the desert. Shortly after transferring to a new parish in Ronan, Montana, Father Kerrigan vanished on the evening of July 20, 1984. Even though his body was never found, it's pretty much a given that Kerrigan was murdered because there was a large amount of blood found in his abandoned car. For a while, it was speculated that both priests might have been the victims of the same killer, but that theory now seems rather unlikely. Even though neither of these cases have been directly linked to the other priest's murders discussed in this episode, it's still quite interesting that Father Rivera's death took place between when Fathers Ryan and Carrier were killed. That's three murders of Catholic priests which took place in adjacent states in the southwest United States during an 11-month period. Now, Father Kerrigan's disappearance took place 2 years later, but here's a potential tie-in to this story. In recent years, it has come out that Kerrigan was on a list of employees from the Roman Catholic Diocese of Helena who were accused of sexual abuse. Throughout his 30-year tenure as a priest, Kerrigan was assigned to 13 different parishes, so all the warning signs were there that he was a sexual predator, and the church kept transferring him around to cover things up. This is why some people, myself included, believe that Kerrigan's death was a vigilante killing and retribution for sexual abuse he committed. At one point, Kerrigan had a 3-month stay at the Congregation of the Servants of the Paraclete Center in Jemez Springs, New Mexico, a retreat designed for priests with personal problems, including sexual misconduct. So here's where the potential tie-in comes in. Given that he was from Ireland and went on to do missionary work in Africa, one of the big mysteries surrounding Father Patrick Ryan is how this guy wound up becoming the pastor at a church in a small, out-of-the-way town like Denver City, Texas. All we know is that he was assigned there in 1979, but there's no official record to indicate how this happened. Well, here's the thing. It's been rumored that the bishop of the Amarillo Diocese actively sought out priests from Jemez Springs, whom he could assign to the remote outpost parishes in West Texas. In fact, it's estimated that around 1/4 of the priests in the Amarillo Diocese during this period were from Jemez Springs. The implication is pretty clear. Those outpost parishes in West Texas were probably not the most desirable assignments, so what better solution than to send the priests with troubled backgrounds there so that any potential issues might fly under the radar? Of course, the records from the Servants of the Paraclete Center have long since been destroyed, so we can't be certain if Father Ryan ever spent time there, but I would not be the least bit surprised if he went there for sexual misconduct. We have James Harry Reyes' claims that Ryan forced him to perform oral sex, and I have no reason to believe his story isn't true. There are also the two teenage boys who claim that Ryan tried to solicit sex from them, and just look at the manner in which his body was found. He was nude inside a motel room 90 miles away from his church, which he had checked into under a false name. So this strongly indicates that Ryan was there for a sexual encounter which went horribly wrong. And even though he has never been officially exonerated, I think it goes without saying that James Harry Reyes could not have committed this crime. Reyes has receipts and witnesses placing him hundreds of miles away from the motel during the time period the murder took place. Now, admittedly, I found it odd that a guy who was intoxicated that night would be so meticulous about saving his receipts, and I guess if you try hard enough, you could spin things to make it look like Reyes was trying hard to fabricate an alibi for himself, or that he convinced his alibi witnesses to lie for him. But the one piece of evidence which cannot be explained away is the time-stamped speeding ticket Reyes received over 200 miles away from the murder scene. There's no way he could possibly fake something like that. Like I said earlier, if Reyes was guilty, he would have to travel from Roswell to Odessa and then travel back to that specific location to receive the ticket at 12:15 a.m., and the only way he could pull that off is if he traveled nearly 130 miles per hour the entire trip. It's just not physically possible for him to have done this. With such overwhelming evidence of his innocence, you're probably wondering how Reyes was convicted in the first place, but it sounds like his drunken confession went a long way. Remember, Reyes was initially cleared as a suspect in the early stages of the investigation, but only got charged after phoning the police to confess to Father Ryan's murder. Back then, there was not the same level of awareness with the general public about how common false confessions are, and many people still had the mindset that no one would ever confess to a crime they didn't commit. Oh, and one of the jurors actually stated that Reyes was convicted, and I quote, based on his confession and characteristics. Well, let's put it this way. Reyes was an Apache Indian, an alcoholic with over 30 arrests on his record, and he was an admitted homosexual who tried to claim that a well-respected priest forced him to perform oral sex. It's easy to see how a jury in Texas during the early 1980s would let personal prejudice influence their decision to find him guilty. Unfortunately, since all the original evidence from the murder scene has been destroyed, and DNA testing is no longer an option, it will be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to clear Reyes' name, and he might have to carry the stigma of being a convicted murderer for the rest of his life. So this begs the question, could the mysterious William L. Toomey have been the real killer of Father Ryan? Well, no one even considered this possibility until a campaign to exonerate Reyes started garnering mainstream publicity during the 1990s. Frank Richardson, the Boise police detective who investigated Toomey's suicide, learned about Ryan's murder on an episode of A Current Affair and thought there might be a possible connection between the two cases. When Toomey's story was originally featured on Unsolved Mysteries, no one really seemed to suspect anything particularly sinister about Toomey's background. Since his suicide took place in early December, one possible theory was that Toomey was feeling the depression and loneliness people often experience around the Christmas holidays and just wanted to take his own life. If he had no friends or family, he could have decided to commit suicide inside a church because it was the one place where he felt comfortable. He carried around a suicide note and $1,900 to take care of the expenses of his cremation. If his body was found elsewhere, someone could have very well been tempted to steal that money, but Toomey figured that church was the one place where whoever found him would respect his wishes and give his death the dignity and respect he desired. And sure enough, even though no one knew who he was, a lot of people attended his funeral and treated the death of a complete stranger with a lot of compassion. But the circumstances of his suicide are so unusual that I always got the sense that there was a lot more to this story than simply a depressed man wanting to take his own life. I've always found it very curious that he apparently wanted to go into the confessional, which was occupied at the time, but then sat down and took cyanide before he could make his confession. Did he just get impatient and decide he couldn't wait? If he was looking to be absolved of his sins, it's odd that he would take his own life before doing so. One theory which has been pushed around is that perhaps Toomey had already ingested the cyanide before he even entered the church, but underestimated how quickly it would take effect. From what I've read about cyanide, even though it is one of the fastest acting poisons around, the length of time it takes to kill you can depend a lot on the dosage, and it won't always kill you instantly. I can visualize a situation where Toomey wanted to make some sort of grand gesture by confessing to all his sins and getting absolved before he died right there in the confessional booth in front of the priest. However, because the confessional was occupied when he arrived, the cyanide took effect before Toomey could actually go in there. I can see some twisted logic to this whole thing. Maybe Toomey believed that if he took the cyanide and then received absolution for his sins, he would technically be absolved for choosing to commit suicide, which, according to the theology of the Catholic Church, is technically a mortal sin itself. But of course, if Toomey already had the cyanide in his system at that point, it would be too late to change his mind. I do agree that Toomey was most likely not from the area because of his Western attire and the unlikeliness of an Idaho resident having a heavy suntan in early December. It's reasonable to assume that Toomey traveled from somewhere in the southern United States to a location where no one knew him, allowing him to commit suicide under the radar. If Toomey had friends and family somewhere, the fact that he left a suicide note asking to be cremated seems to indicate that he did not want anyone to find him. But the most intriguing clue is his decision to sign the name William L. Toomey to the suicide note. I really don't think it's a coincidence that the only lead the investigation turned up in regards to this name was a company which manufactured priest garb. Remember, this was 1982, so you couldn't just type that name into Google to dig up that information. That's a pretty obscure piece of knowledge, so I think there has to be a reason why the quote-unquote unknown wanderer chose that name as his pseudonym. And when you trace the guy's customized belt buckle back to Arizona, and a Catholic priest is murdered in Arizona less than 1 month earlier, then I can see how the wheels might start spinning in the investigators' head. Now, I am the first person to admit that this is hardly concrete evidence that Toomey was involved in these murders, and the connection is tenuous at best. All that being said, it is pretty unusual that in a period of less than 1 year, three separate Catholic priests are brutally murdered in states that border each other. Father Patrick Ryan in Texas in December of 1981, Father Ronaldo Rivera in New Mexico in August of 1982, and Father Benjamin Carrier in Arizona in November of 1982. And then within the next few weeks, James Harry Reyes is charged with Ryan's murder, followed shortly by Mr. Toomey's suicide. So let's compare the murders of these three priests. Obviously, there are compelling similarities between the murders of Father Ryan and Father Carrier, since both men were found nude inside motel rooms with their hands bound behind their backs. There isn't a whole lot of information out there about Carrier's murder, but there are two unidentified suspects who were seen with him before he was killed. While it seems pretty likely that Ryan traveled to his motel for a sexual encounter, we don't know much about Carrier's background to suggest that was the case with him. Maybe he was soliciting these two young men for sex, or maybe he genuinely wanted to help them. Even though Carrier was found naked, we can't say for certain. But I can't rule out the possibility that one or both of the suspects in his case might have been responsible for Father Ryan's murder. One of the most interesting details in Ryan's case is that he left his apartment at the rectory while food was on the stove, so the implication seems to be that he received a phone call while making dinner which prompted him to leave. Now, when you consider the fact that Ryan had already spent the day making the 30-mile drive back and forth between Denver City and Hobbs, and then hopped in his car to make a 90-mile drive to Odessa, it seems like the caller must have told the priest something very important to compel him to leave like that. It's possible the call was from someone Ryan knew who wanted to set up an impromptu sexual liaison at the motel. Or maybe, as has been theorized in the Father John Kerrigan case, someone was attempting to blackmail Ryan over his sexual indiscretions and lured him to his death. I think it's very telling that there was still money inside Ryan's car when it was found, so robbery did not appear to be the motive for this murder. While there are also compelling similarities between Ryan's case and the murder of Father Ronaldo Rivera, It should be pointed out that there is no indication at all that Rivera had ever committed sexual misconduct or had any dark secrets in his background at all. By all accounts, Father Rivera was just an all-around great human being who was beloved by everyone who knew him. In Rivera's case, he was not specifically targeted for murder, because when his killer called the rectory to ask for a priest to come meet him at the rest stop, another priest initially answered the phone. Since this priest could not drive at night, Rivera went in his place. There's no way the killer could have anticipated this, so it seemed like they just wanted to murder any Catholic priest, but did not care who it was. When Rivera's body was found, the only thing missing was his last rites kit, so once again, robbery did not appear to be a motive. It's just like how money was found in Father Ryan's car, but a silver chalice and accordion were missing. In both cases, it almost seemed like the killer wanted a souvenir of their crime, and much like with Ryan's case, Father Rivera's vehicle was driven away from the murder scene and found abandoned hundreds of miles away. So yes, even though there seems to be no sexual motive in Rivera's murder, there are still some interesting similarities between the crimes. When you add in Father Carrier's murder 3 months later, is it possible that some spree killer or killers were traveling through the southern states during this time period and targeting Catholic priests? And if so, was William L. Toomey involved? Well, even though the Carrier murder took place only weeks before Toomey's suicide, the big issue is that the two suspects who were seen with Carrier don't resemble Toomey at all. They both appeared to be in their 20s, while Toomey was believed to be in his late 30s or early 40s. If you look online, you can find an actual photograph of Toomey's body lying on the floor of the church, and he does not resemble the composite sketches of the two suspects. In fact, one of the suspects was described as having a tattoo on his forearm, and as far as I know, Toomey didn't have any tattoos at all. So at the very least, I think it's quite unlikely Toomey was involved in Father Carrier's murder. It's also worth mentioning that unlike the Ryan case, I believe the physical evidence from Carrier's murder scene is still available. I'm not sure if they've ever officially checked this, but it doesn't sound like any of this evidence can be traced back to Toomey. Now, the most compelling theory about Toomey in relation to Father Ryan's murder is that his suicide was motivated by the arrest of James Harry Reyes, which took place less than 3 weeks beforehand. If Toomey was the actual perpetrator, maybe he felt immense guilt over the idea of an innocent man going down for his crime and decided to take his own life. But the problem with this theory is that if Toomey felt that guilty about it, why wouldn't he do something to help clear Reyes' name? Maybe Toomey didn't want to take the rap for Ryan's murder and go to prison, but why not make at least some mention of Reyes in his suicide note and tell everyone that an innocent man is being charged with his crime? I guess it's possible that Toomey was planning to reveal all this during his visit to the confessional until he succumbed to the cyanide, but even if he did, the priest would not be able to reveal anything Toomey told him because of the seal of confession. If Toomey wanted to leave behind concrete evidence that he was responsible for Ryan's murder, then the best way he could have done that would be to produce the silver chalice and accordion which were stolen from the trunk of Ryan's car. If Toomey had these items in his possession when he died, then that would provide very solid evidence that he was the real killer and that Reyes did not commit the crime. But of course, when a person commits suicide, you can never really predict what is going on in their minds at that time or figure out their actions. In Toomey's mind, there might have been a perfectly logical reason for him to commit suicide in the fashion that he did, but we may never know the reasons why. There are so many potential backstories you could dream up for him. If Toomey committed any of the aforementioned murders, he could have done so out of revenge because he was sexually abused by a Catholic priest. Or he could have wanted vengeance because a loved one was sexually abused by a Catholic priest. Or maybe he just had a hatred for Catholic priests in general. As much as I'd love to tie everything up into a neat bow and proclaim that William L. Toomey was a serial killer of Catholic priests and responsible for the murders of Fathers Ryan, Rivera, and Carrier, which would conveniently resolve four mysteries simultaneously, I don't think the real truth is anything like that. I actually have a feeling that the explanation for the unknown wanderer's suicide might be a lot simpler than we think it is. I mean, it's not impossible he could have been involved in one or more of the crimes I've discussed, or had some sort of crazy backstory, But let's remember the story of Lori Erica Ruff, whom I'm sure many of you are familiar with. In case you're not, she was a woman who committed a dramatic suicide in 2010, and it was soon discovered that she was living under a stolen identity. For years, people dreamed up a ton of elaborate theories about who she really was, such as her being a spy, or a missing person, or a victim who escaped from a cult. But in the end, it turned out she was just an ordinary woman who was very unhappy with her home life, so she decided to take off and start a new life under a new identity, before she eventually decided to commit suicide. The truth was a lot less complicated than people thought, and that could very well be the case with William L. Toomey. He may have just been an ordinary guy living an unhappy life somewhere far away from Idaho, and once he decided he'd had enough, he took off, destroyed all traces of his original identity, and committed suicide in a place where he knew he wouldn't be recognized. Overall, I'm inclined to think that Toomey's backstory is a lot closer to that scenario, but the only thing which gives me pause is the choice of name in his suicide note, and its connection to the company which manufactured Priestgarb. While Toomey may not be involved in any murders of Catholic priests, it's possible he had some sort of experience related with the Catholic Church, such as being sexually abused by a priest while he was younger, which compelled him to end his life in such a symbolic fashion. We may never know. I can't completely rule out the possibility that Toomey is linked to any of these crimes, but until I see definitive evidence, I'll just assume that he had his own deep-seated personal reasons for doing what he did, which we don't know about. As for the priest murders, the only thing I know for sure is that James Harry Reyes did not commit any of them, and deserves a full pardon for the murder of Father Patrick Ryan. I wouldn't necessarily say that all these murders were committed by the same person, but there are enough similarities to suggest these cases might be linked somehow. In regards to William L. Toomey, there's always been an ethical debate about cases where unidentified decedents take major steps to conceal their identity. Some would argue that if the victims really didn't want to be identified, maybe we should respect their dying wishes. Well, the problem is that Toomey might still have family out there wondering what happened to him, and regardless of his dying wishes, they still deserve to have closure. This is probably the first episode I've done where I featured no less than 5 different mysteries which are unsolved. So if you have any information about the identity of William L. Toomey, aka the Unknown Wanderer, or information about the murders of Fathers Patrick Ryan, Benjamin Carrier, Ronaldo Rivera, or John Kerrigan, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own theory about any of these cases, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. So a big thanks and a shout out to the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. We've also got a new donor this week named Aaron, so thank you very much, Aaron. And we've got 2 important announcements to make. Number 1, last week we just started a new Facebook discussion group for The Trail Went Cold, where our listeners can discuss the podcast, our featured cases, true crime, or whatever floats your boat. You can find the link for it on our Facebook page, and all you have to do is click the button to request to join, and I'll approve your entry into the group as soon as possible. But our second big announcement is that we've launched a new contest in which one of you lucky listeners can win a cameo on The Trail Went Cold. The winner of this contest will earn the opportunity to record themselves reciting the opening narration on a future episode of the podcast, so basically, the whole world will be able to hear you say the immortal words, "After that, the trail went cold." If you wish to enter this contest, all you have to do is send me an email naming the one unsolved case you'd most like to see featured on this podcast. You probably know the email address by heart, but please send your entry to robin.warder@icloud.com under the subject line Trail Went Cold Contest. That's robin.warder@icloud.com under Trail Went Cold Contest. We've also got the full details about this contest on our Facebook and Twitter pages if you need to double-check them. The deadline to enter is this coming Saturday, August 19th at midnight Eastern Time. Shortly after that, I will be holding a random drawing on Facebook Live in order to pick the winner. And if you don't win this time around, not to worry, because I'm planning to make this a recurring contest and give many of my wonderful supporters the chance to make a voiceover cameo on the podcast. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website, so if you want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new minisode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.